أشهد أن محمد رسول الله. أشهد أن محمد رسول
الله. Welcome back to another episode of the Family Focus. Assalamu alaikum. Peace be unto you. Today we continue with our eighth program in our series dealing with the political system of Islam. We'll be discussing the choice of, continuing our discussion of the choice of ruler in Islam. Specifically, we'll be having a further examination of the concept of the Imamite and the place of the companions of Prophet Muhammad, peace and blessings be upon him. I have joining me as usual on the program Dr. Jamal Badawi of St. Mary's University. Brother Jamal, assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
Could I have you summarize the main points that we touched on in our program last week in the series?
Okay. In the seventh program, we continued the discussion of this notion held by the Imamite, or the known as Shiite Muslims, the minority of Muslims, which basically centers around the exclusive succession of the Prophet in terms of rulership within his family, a part of his family, namely Ali and his descendants. And he indicated again, or elaborated more, the reasons why the majority of the Muslims, or 90%, do not share with the Shiite brethren this particular view. And he indicated more heavily in this particular program, in the seventh program, why it is an untenable assumption to assume that the companions of the Prophet were the most pious and most sacrificing, self-sacrificing people, have conspired collectively to disobey the Prophet, peace be upon him, if it were true that he appointed Ali. Because if he did, they would have immediately followed his instructions. And we tried to elaborate a little bit on why this could have not been the case.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, perhaps we should examine what the Prophet has said about some of the crucial companions. It might be appropriate to begin with the first caliph, Abu Bakr.
I think this would be a good approach, because after all, if there was any accusation in general against the companions by disobeying the Prophet, how about the at least the three who accepted, in fact, to be rulers in place of Ali, in case Ali was actually the only legitimate heir? I think this would be an appropriate thing to look into. It might be useful also to make a cross-reference to what has been mentioned in a previous occasion about Abu Bakr, that there is reference to him in the Quran in chapter 9 in verse 40, when it speaks about the two who were in the cave, that is, in the migration from Mecca to Medina, and the two were Prophet Muhammad, number one, number two was his closest companion, Abu Bakr. And that's why he was called Rafiq al-Ghar, the companion of the cave, or the companion of the Prophet. To look into some of the prophetic saying about Abu Bakr, it's really amazing. In one saying, he said that among all the people I am indebted to in terms of doing favor to me, both in his property, sacrificing his property, and by his company, is Abu Bakr. And if I were, the Prophet says, if I were to take Khalil, which means one who is dearest in love, other than my Lord, I would have taken Abu Bakr. But he, that is Abu Bakr, is my brother and my companion, for God has taken me, referring to himself, to the Prophet, has taken me as his dearest or closest in love. In other words, he says that had it not been that the closest to me is God, I would have chosen Abu Bakr. And there are other similar versions emphasizing the same meaning of the of this prophetic saying, narrated in Bukhari and in Muslim, in more than one version, in fact. And another saying narrated in Bukhari and Muslim, the Prophet was asked once, who among all people is most beloved of you? He said, Aisha, that's his wife. And then the person who was asking the question said, who is next of men? He's asking, how about men? He said, her father. And that's interesting, because the father of Aisha was Abu Bakr. So Abu Bakr was not only the close companion of the Prophet, but he was also he gave his daughter to the Prophet in marriage. So said her father, that's Abu Bakr. And then the person asked, who's next? He said, Umar. And that's quite revealing, because the Prophet put as number one in closeness to him his wife Aisha, then Abu Bakr from men, second Umar, and both of these were the first and second caliph after the Prophet. And at Tirmidhi, the Prophet said that none of the people who had any favor on us, that except that we have already compensated him or reciprocated his favor, except Abu Bakr, because Abu Bakr had, or we owe Abu Bakr favors that only God, Allah, will reward him for it in the Day of Judgment. In At-Tirmidhi also there are two other citations which are quite interesting. In one, the Prophet addressed Abu Bakr and he said, "Anta atiqun nar," or "Anta atiqun Allah min al-nar." You are saved by Allah from the hellfire, assured him. In another saying, he said, "You are my companion in the cave, that is during migration, and you are also my companion on the pond or fountain," in reference to the fountain in the hereafter, in the garden of the paradise. In another reference of prophetic saying, Abu Dawood, as part of the hadith, because it's a little long, it says, "O Abu Bakr, you are the first one of my followers to enter into paradise." And that again is an expression of his status, that the first of all of the followers of the Prophet would be Abu Bakr to enter paradise. In praising both Abu Bakr and Umar, the first and second caliph, there are some saying that combine both of them. Just to give a couple of examples, in Ibn Majah and At-Tirmidhi, it was narrated that the Prophet said that Abu Bakr and Umar are the deans or sayyida, masters or deans of the elderly people in paradise from beginning to end, that's from the beginning of the world to the end, except for the prophets and messengers. So he put them immediately in a status following prophets and messengers, who are definitely a higher status than any companion, for that matter, Ali, Abu Bakr, or Umar, doesn't matter. In At-Tirmidhi, the Prophet also said that every prophet had two wazirs, or two, you might say, deputies in paradise, in heavens, and two deputies on earth. As to me, Prophet Muhammad, he said, as to me, I have two deputies in heavens, and these are Gabriel and Mikael, angels. As far as my deputies on earth, they are Abu Bakr and Umar, in that order he mentioned in the saying. So these sayings are sufficient to show the great status of Abu Bakr, that he was second to none but to Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him. And indeed, it's interesting to make a point here that there are other sayings of the Prophet, not only praising Abu Bakr, but even prophesying with approval that he will actually be, or end up being, the first caliph to rule the Muslim community after the death of the Prophet, peace be upon him.
Well, having said that, I think it's important that these sayings be put into their proper context. And I'd like to ask you to shed some light on these sayings and explain whether they are consistent, in your view, with the freedom of choice of rulers, which we've been discussing in several of our previous programs in the series.
Okay, let me take the second part of the question first. No, I don't see any difficulty or inconsistency between that and the freedom of choice, because the context of these sayings is not a context of imposition. It's not like the Prophet instructing and saying, you must take Abu Bakr as the ruler after me. He never said that. But these sayings have an element of prophecy, maybe prophecy with approval, but never with the sense of imposition on the people. So there's no question of consistency here. And no Sunni scholar, for example, take this as the evidence that Abu Bakr was the eligible person to be chosen after the Prophet. It's not an evidence in itself, but it's quite a revealing prophecy about what happens or was to happen after the Prophet. Now, coming back to the first part of the question, or some of those sayings. Well, in the sickness of the Prophet shortly before his death, as we mentioned previously in one program, he actually asked Abu Bakr to lead prayers. Now, leading prayer in Islam is not just a religious function which is separate. Usually, in Islamic law, the ruler, if he's present, is the one who should lead public prayers. Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, was the one who not only led the community of Muslims but led prayers. Both functions were, you know, one and the same, really. So by asking Abu Bakr during his sickness and choosing him in particular above all other companions, even the closest, to lead prayers, carries a very significant implication. In another important saying, which was narrated both in Bukhari and Muslim, the most important two authorities of prophetic saying, it says that one woman came to ask something from the Prophet, and he said to her, "You come later and come some other time." And she said, "Well, if I don't find you," she meant, suppose you're dead by that time. She said, "If I can't find you," he said, "All right, then you come and ask Abu Bakr." Again, there's a clear hint here. In At-Tirmidhi, the Prophet even said it more clearly. He said, "Follow the guidance or the steps of those who will come after me, Abu Bakr and Umar." So he gave again some kind of indication that these people would be rightly guided, that, you know, their leadership is something that you should not reject, but again without imposition on the Muslims. During his death, or on his deathbed, it was narrated in Muslim, and that's an interesting saying, that the Prophet told Aisha, his wife, he said, "Bring your father, call your father, Abu Bakr. Call your father and your brother. I would like to write a book or recommendation." The context of the saying here is that recommendation as to who, you know, may be the best to succeed me. "Because I am afraid," the Prophet continued, "that some aspirant might save me. But God and the believers will not accept but Abu Bakr." That was much even clearer in hinting about Abu Bakr. And it was also very revealing in terms of prophecy, because it did happen that after the Prophet's death, there was one person we discussed before, Sa'd ibn Ubadah, who said, you know, he was almost about to be nominated to be the successor of the Prophet. He was aspiring to it, and he was a little bit uncomfortable that Abu Bakr was chosen by everybody else. So this is a clear indication, as I said, by way of hinting and prophesying what will happen after the death of the Prophet.
Well, now, you made reference to the Prophet, peace and blessings be upon him, preparing the document. Was it ever prepared? Did he ever write down?
Well, there is no evidence that this document was ever written. Of course, the Prophet didn't know how to read or write, so probably what he meant to write, in a sense, to dictate, so that, you know, give some instructions. But there is no evidence that I know of that this document was ever written, or that the Prophet even uttered what he might have been thinking of saying. Of course, this might raise a question as to why. What's the explanation? Why it wasn't written? In my humble understanding, there could be at least two viable explanations. One is that there had been a pattern in the life of the Prophet that if he's not receiving a specific revelation in one aspect and he applies his own judgment, and if that judgment differs from God's judgment, the Quran comes and corrects him, or the revelation comes and says, "No, do it better this way," even though he did it with good intention. He said, "No, God wanted it done this way." So it's quite possible that after the Prophet thought of that, he received revelation from God that it's better not to write that document, possibly to maintain again the principle of freedom of choice. The second viable explanation is that it's quite possible that the Prophet himself had a second thought, and maybe what he intended was to just recommend or nominate Abu Bakr to be his successor. But he might have feared that this might be taken as a precedent and obligation, and establish a principle that is contrary to what the Quran and what his own teaching require by way of mutual consultation. However, in any eventuality, with or without that document, we find that the unanimous, virtual unanimous position of all Muslims, whether from Medina or migrants from Mecca, all agreed that Abu Bakr was the most qualified person. So the judgment here was quite consistent with the desire of the Prophet, even though he did not impose it or require it.
You know, to continue our discussion and examination of the prophetic sayings with respect to the very close companions of Prophet Muhammad, peace and blessings be upon him, perhaps we should now turn to some examination of the prophetic sayings with respect to the second caliph, Omar.
Well, like Abu Bakr also, there are so many favorable things that the Prophet said about Omar. And anyone who studied Islamic history knows how great he was in, as an administrator, as a states person. He's just unique. I mean, he's a class, really, by himself. In both Bukhari and Muslim, the Prophet said that among the people before you, in nations before, that's before Islam, there were individuals who were inspired. And if anyone in my among my followers is so inspired, it is Umar. The same saying in a different meaning also was mentioned in At-Tirmidhi, in which the Prophet said that if there were any prophet after me, it would have been Umar. Of course, there is no prophet after Muhammad. Said, if there were any prophet after me, it would have been Umar, at least in terms of his insight and inspirational type of qualities. In At-Tirmidhi and another similar version in Abu Dawood, the Prophet also said that God has placed truth upon the tongue and heart of Umar. This last saying of the Prophet is corroborated in several other saying of the Prophet, one narrated in Bukhari and Muslim, in which it shows that some issues that were subject to discussion during the life of the Prophet, in some of those issues Umar took certain positions and gave certain opinions which happened to be identical to what later on came by way of revelation from God to the Prophet, which is again a reflection on this insightful nature of Umar. The Prophet also, as narrated in Abu Dawood, At-Tirmidhi and Ibn Majah, he said that the people in paradise would look up to the highest, or people who occupy the highest position in paradise, those who are above even those in paradise, like you people look at the stars in the horizons. And among those, that is among those in the highest of the high, are Abu Bakr and Umar, and they are even more blessed. One time in At-Tirmidhi, for example, the Prophet was quoted as saying to Umar, Umar, if the Satan or devil is going in one particular path and you're going in that path, he will take another path. That is, this, even the devil would be scared of you. And anyone who studies the life of Umar, he was amazing, you know, in terms of his steadfastness and strictness in the implementation of truth. He said even the devil would be scared from you. And there are two other additional and really interesting saying of the Prophet which were revealed to him through a dream. One was narrated in both Bukhari and Muslim, the two primary sources of prophetic tradition, in which the Prophet said, while I was sleeping, somebody brought me a cup of milk. So I kept drinking from that cup until I was totally full. And then I gave the excess, the extra of that milk to Umar. So the companions of the Prophet asked him, how do you interpret that dream? How do you interpret it? He said, knowledge. In other words, that milk was knowledge. I had all the knowledge that I could absorb, and then whatever remains of that milk or knowledge is given to Umar. So this is an acknowledgement also of the high status of Umar in terms of his knowledge. Like Abu Bakr also, the praises of the Prophet of Umar was not only restricted to just praising him, but like Abu Bakr also, there were clear prophecies that he will also be the caliph after Abu Bakr, that he will be a caliph after the Prophet or successor, and more particularly the second. Which is an interesting...
It is very interesting. I wonder if perhaps I could get you to elaborate on it a little more and perhaps cite a few references just for further examination.
Okay, even before Umar accepted Islam, as narrated in Ahmad and At-Tirmidhi, the Prophet made a prayer and he said, "Oh God, strengthen Islam either by Abu Jahl or by Umar." And it ended up actually that Islam was very much strengthened by Umar, strong person in faith and in everything, dissemination, embracing Islam. It was indeed under the caliphate of Umar, the second caliph, that an estimated 36,000 townships came under the rule of Islam in such places as Persia, Greater Syria, and Egypt. 36,000, which is again a fulfillment of the prophecy of the Prophet Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him. In another saying which seemed to relate to the same subject, to the spread of Islam under the reign or rule of Umar, and this was narrated in both Bukhari and Muslim, the Prophet said, "While I was in my sleep, I saw people being shown to me, and each one had a shirt on him." So he said some of those people had shirts up to here, up to their chest. Some other people have shirts less than that. And then Umar came and he had a very long shirt that was dragging behind him. So again the companions asked him, "How do you interpret this dream?" He said, "Ad-deen," that is the spread and preservation of faith. In other words, the Islam would be that much for some people, would be that much for some people, but during the reign of Umar, Islam will spread so greatly that the, as symbolized in a very long shirt that is dragging behind Umar, which is again something that has taken place indeed in the greatest number of townships that came under the rule of Islam, came under Caliphate of Umar. Another quite revealing prophecy was narrated both also in Bukhari and Muslim. The Prophet said, "While I was sleeping, I saw myself on a well with a pulley, with a bucket, a pulley and bucket. And then he said, I drew as much water as God willed from that well." And then Abu Bakr, known as Ibn Abi Quhafa, that's another name of him, Abu Bakr came and he drew from the well maybe one or two bucketful. And then he continued towards the end of the saying, and he said that this bucket became very large bucket, and then Umar came. And he said, "I've never seen anyone as strong as Umar in drawing plenty of water from that well, until people actually settled in this area and made it a resting place for camels." You notice here that if this water here is in reference to the rule and the spread of Islam, then Abu Bakr actually ruled for 1 or 2 years, 1 or 2 bucketful. Umar's reign continued for a little over 10 years, during which Islam spread so greatly. So that again was a clear prophecy about the contribution of Umar to the strengthening of the faith. And it should be observed here also that the position of Abu Bakr and Umar as the deputies of the Prophet in his lifetime is a matter which is recognized in his lifetime, even by the enemies, by his own enemies. I'll give just one quick illustration of that. In the Battle of Uhud, when the pagans thought that they have really defeated the Muslims, some of them even thought that they have already killed the Prophet, Abu Sufyan, at that time non-Muslim, started to shout at Muslims' camp and said, "Is Muhammad among you?" Nobody replied, so he might have thought that he was killed. Then he said, "Is Abu Bakr among you?" Nobody replied. His third question, "Is Umar among you?" In other words, what he was really worried, he wanted to make sure that the biggest heads, really, are killed, the Prophet and his two deputies, the Prophet, Abu Bakr, and Umar. These were his first questions to ask. So there is a clear indication as well of the same kind of
Mm-hmm.
Well, in the 10 or so minutes that we have remaining on today's program, I'd like to turn to an examination of the prophetic traditions with respect to two other companions of the Prophet. First of all, with Osman, and then perhaps finishing off with Ali. Was there mention of the third Prophet, Osman, in the prophetic traditions?
The third caliph.
Yes.
Yes. In fact, for example, in At-Tirmidhi and Ibn Majah, the Prophet said, every prophet had or has a companion in paradise, and my companion in paradise is Osman. That's the third caliph, or who became third caliph. In the preparation for one of the battles known as Jaish al-Usra, it was really difficult and tough time. The Prophet appealed to people to donate, to help equip the army. And Osman came forward and he said, all right, I donate 100 camels complete with saddles and pack saddles. And that was not enough, so the Prophet kept urging people to donate more. Osman increased it to 200 camels. Upon further urging, he increased it to 300 camels full with saddles and pack saddles. At this moment, Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, said that there will be nothing to be held against Osman after this. In other words, even if he makes some mistakes here and there, God will forgive it because of this great act of devotion on his part. Like Abu Bakr and Umar, there seemed to have been some indication also that Osman would be among the first four caliphs, and that he will die as a martyr, because actually he was killed by rebels. He was martyred. In one long saying, I'll just take the part that relates to this particular topic, narrated in Bukhari, it says that Abu Musa al-Ash'ari, another companion, one day acted as a gatekeeper of the Prophet. And then he said that Abu Bakr came to seek audience with the Prophet. So when he talked to the Prophet, that somebody's waiting, he said, all right, let him in, let Abu Bakr in, and give him the glad tidings that he will go to paradise. And then Umar came. The Prophet said, all right, let him in and give him the glad tidings that he will go to paradise. The third person to seek audience with the Prophet was Osman. And when the Prophet was told, he said, all right, let him in and give him the glad tidings that he will go to paradise, but that a calamity will befall him, which was again a prophecy that he will be killed actually by rebels. One time the Prophet, along with Abu Bakr, Umar and Osman, the first three caliphs after him, stood on the Mount of Uhud. There was some kind of trembling, and the Prophet said to the mountain, calm down, because on top of you there is a Prophet, a Siddiq, a truthful, and two martyrs. And that's exactly what happened. Prophet Muhammad, Siddiq, or the truthful, is Abu Bakr,
mm-hmm.
and two martyrs, Umar and Osman, because both of these were actually martyrs. In another saying of the Prophet, also narrated in Tirmidhi and Nisa'i and Ad-Darqutni, the Prophet was even more specific. He said, Osman, maybe God will dress you a shirt. He meant by a shirt here the responsibility of leading the Muslim community, of being the ruler. God will dress you, may dress you with a shirt, and if they wish you to take it off, don't take it off for them. And that's exactly what happened, because the rebels came to force Osman to resign, and he did not resign as a matter of principle, because at least there was no justification to concede to the demands of these unreasonable rebels. So it's quite obvious from these sayings that we discussed in this program that the prophecy with approval about Abu Bakr, Umar and Osman were clearly stated by the Prophet, even in that particular order. And if his teachings and instructions was that only Ali is the legitimate heir, he would have said something different and much more explicitly than that.
Mm-hmm. Well, unfortunately, we don't have time to go into a further discussion of the prophetic sayings with respect to Ali, but perhaps in a future program we'll be able to do that. We have to conclude our program for today. We want to thank you for watching and invite you back next week. Assalamu alaikum. Peace be unto you.
أشهد أن محمدا رسول الله